Hey, y'all, thanks for coming tonight. I thought we'd get started with Bible study, and then we'll pray. We got a hymn to sing, and then we can eat. Yes, I'm gonna go from Mark tonight, and Mark is the most worked over part of my Bible, I think. So, yes, I have completely. I was looking at it. This is the passage that I'm reading from tonight, right here. On this. So, thankfully, it hasn't been totally lost. This is Mark chapter 3, verses 1 to 6. This is Jesus healing on the Sabbath. And he entered the synagogue again, and a man was there who had a withered hand. So they watched him closely whether he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Step forward." Then he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they kept silent. And when he had looked around at them with anger, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored as whole as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and immediately plotted with the Herodians against him how they might destroy him. Okay, I think this is a great story. Mark's gospel is filled with stories that are just so so neat and tidy in how they communicate what it is they're going to teach. First thing to notice, I think, about this story is how it is full of irony. I know I've done a few other little talks on Mark's gospel with you. Have I talked about irony in Mark's gospel in this group? I mean, way, way back years ago, I preached on it. Did I talk about it?
I think you did.
Did I talk about Mark 14 and Peter's denial? Did we talk about that as an example? You think I did?
Irony being mentioned.
Okay, well, I'll just mention this again, just to give you a sense of how full Mark's gospel is of irony. If you go to Mark chapter 14, Jesus predicts that Peter will deny him three times before the cock crows. And of course, Peter denies that. He denies that prophecy. He says, "There's no way. I'll even die for you if I have to." Okay, well, then Jesus gets arrested, he gets taken away, he starts getting mocked and beaten by the soldiers that have arrested him. And one of the ways they mock him is they have heard, of course, that Jesus is a prophet. And so as they're striking him and hitting him, they say, "Prophesy." Like, they say you're a prophet, so give us a prophecy, you know, kind of making fun of him because they think he's not a prophet. Well, the way Mark tells the story, it's actually what's called a Markan sandwich. So it's got one story inserted inside of another. At the very moment that they are mocking Jesus and saying, "Prophesy," what is happening out in the courtyard? Peter is denying Jesus three times to a young girl, fulfilling one of Jesus' prophecies. So it's just highly ironic. Jesus has made this prophecy. He gets mocked by people who think he's not a prophet. And at that very moment, his prophecy about Peter is coming to fulfillment. It's very ironic, but it's also a very exquisite kind of design to the way the story is told. It's kind of like if it were put in movie form, you might have it as a split screen. And one part of the screen, they're making fun of Jesus as a false prophet. And the other part of the screen, you see one of his prophecies coming true. So obviously he is a prophet. Mark is just full of that kind of thing. Now, in this story, in Mark chapter 3, we have another little bit of irony. Think about this. What does Jesus do on the Sabbath in this story? There's a man with a withered hand, and this he can't make it to Grady Maddox for hand surgery, so he goes to Jesus, right? And Jesus heals his withered hand on the Sabbath. The Pharisees were actually watching closely to see if Jesus would heal the man on the Sabbath, okay? And they're upset by this. They think it's unlawful what Jesus has done. It certainly violates their, I guess you could say, their traditions, their twisted, perverted version of the Sabbath. Okay, so Jesus heals on the Sabbath, and they get angry about that, and then what do they go out to do at the end of this story? They hatch a plot. Okay, and it actually says they immediately went out. So we are still on the Sabbath. They immediately went out and started conspiring as to how they could put Jesus to death. So it's kind of ironic, isn't it? For the Pharisees, it's wrong to heal on the Sabbath, but it's okay to plot murder. Okay, that's how twisted they are. That's how wrapped up they are in their own hypocrisy. In fact, I think it's really interesting. At the end of this, in verse 6, it says they went out immediately plotted with the Herodians. A couple things about that are interesting. One, it says immediately. Normally in Mark's gospel, Jesus is the one who goes out and does something immediately. In Mark's gospel, Jesus is constantly on the move. And so Mark has Jesus immediately going over here, and then he immediately goes over here. You don't have even any really long teaching blocks for most of Mark's gospel like you do in the others, because Jesus is always on the move. He's immediately going here, immediately going there. He's a man on a mission. That's really what it's about. He's a man on a mission. Well, his mission, of course, is to bring salvation. The Pharisees have their mission too, and I think that's indicated by that word immediately. They've got a mission. They've got a sense of urgency. They're going to go out and start plotting against Jesus, how to bring Jesus down, how to bring Jesus to destruction. So there's a lot of foreshadowing here about what's to come later on. In fact, it tells us here that they went out to plot with the Herodians against Jesus, which is really interesting because in terms of the politics of the day, the Pharisees were on one end of the spectrum and the Herodians were on the other end of the spectrum. They normally would not have anything to do with each other, but they both have a common enemy. They have found a common enemy in Jesus, and so they will conspire together against Jesus. And of course, ultimately, that's how Jesus gets crucified, is the Pharisees work with the Herodians to nail Jesus to the tree. There's foreshadowing in that kind of way. You might think with the Pharisees and Herodians working together, there are many times in church history where people who were normally political enemies actually came together to persecute the church. I mean, this would be kind of like Republicans and Democrats coming together to persecute the church or something like that. Just people are on opposite ends of the spectrum. Maybe that doesn't so far-fetched now. I don't know. But that's the kind of thing that's happening here. It's not the normal kind of alliance they'd have. The one other thing to notice about this is that the Herodians were descendants of Esau. Remember, Esau was the rejected son of... of Isaac. Yes. I shouldn't draw a blank. We have an Isaac here in the group. So Isaac and Jacob. Esau is the rejected son, okay? Esau's descendants, okay, they're the Herodians. The Herodians are descendants of Esau. And so by teaming up with the Herodians, what the Pharisees are really doing is saying, we would rather have a son of Esau rule over us than a son of David. And so again, you really see here just how wicked they have become, how hypocritical they have become. Blaise Pascal once said that men never do evil so cheerfully and completely as when they do it out of a religious motive for religious reasons. And that's the Pharisees. They're doing evil in the name of religion. The most evil acts of all are done in the name of religion. So what's happening here? Let's focus on the story a little bit more. This is a time in Jesus' ministry when his popularity is escalating with the people, especially because of these miracles he's doing. But the opposition is escalating as well. And so there's a lot of conflict around Jesus. And this is actually one in a series of conflict stories. Mark 1 and 2 just has a series of stories where Jesus is in conflict with the Pharisees. And it really helps us to understand how he will ultimately end up crucified. But it's really interesting here. This one's a little bit different in terms of the structure. Here, Jesus asks them a question. He asks the Pharisees a question before he heals the man. He says, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? And obviously, that's the contrast between how Jesus acts on the Sabbath versus the Pharisees. They can't answer his question. Previous to this, the Pharisees, you know, Jesus has been asked a question again and again and again, and he will answer the question. But here, when he asks them a question, it just says they stayed silent. They would not answer his question. Now, there are several themes here that this connects with. I just want to give you two Old Testament themes. A lot of ways in which this story echoes the Old Testament, and ultimately, of course, I think it shows us how Jesus is the fulfillment of the Sabbath, the whole Sabbath theme. Is really fulfilled in Jesus. But I want to point you to two other things that may be not as obvious here. Okay, one is, I think this story is presenting Jesus as the true tree of life. Go back to Genesis chapters 2 and 3. There are two trees in the Garden of Eden. There's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and there's the tree of life. Adam and Eve actually had access to the tree of life. That's where they should have gone. And by partaking of the tree of life, they would have been confessing that their life comes from God, and that would have been a good thing for them to do. Instead, they go to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the one that is forbidden to them, at least for a time. And you know how the story goes. Eve is deceived. She takes the fruit of the tree, then she gives some to her husband, and together they rebel against God. They sin against God in this way. Well, what's interesting is when God comes to them, God banishes them from the garden. And he says the reason is because they have stretched out their hand to take the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he says they're banished from the garden, so they will not stretch out their hand and take of the tree of life. Because if they take of the tree of life at this point, it will confirm them, I think, in a state of perpetual death. So they're banished from the garden. When Jesus says to this man, stretch out your hand, and the man stretches out his hand to Jesus. Okay, Eve stretched out her hand to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God sent them away so they would not stretch out their hand to the tree of life after that. When Jesus says to the man, stretch out your hand, Jesus is saying, I am your tree of life. I will give you life. I will give you what was lost in the garden. Okay, Jesus is going to be crucified on a tree. Ultimately, his cross becomes the tree of life for us. But Jesus is the fruit of that tree. He's the one we must partake of. So I think that's a key theme here. Jesus is the tree of life. If we want life, we go to Jesus. There's another theme here, and this has to do with the priesthood. There was actually a curse that God pronounced on Israel in Zechariah chapter 11. When the Israelites were in a period of rebellion and unfaithfulness, God curses them by saying, let Israel's hand be withered. Let his hand, speaking of Israel, let his hand be withered. And the reason for that is because under the Old Testament law, priests could not have any physical deformities. If you were born into the tribe of Levi and you're going to be a priest, if you had some kind of physical deformity, like a withered hand, you could not be a priest. That disqualified you. You had to be physically whole. And of course, that was true of the animal sacrifices too, because of what they represented. You couldn't offer an animal sacrifice that has a withered, well, maybe a broken limb or something like that, some kind of defect in the animal. The sacrificial animal had to be a clean animal, and it had to be an animal without any kind of defect, an animal without blemish. Well, of course, all of Israel is blemished. I think really this man here represents what Israel has become. Israel is a nation with a withered hand, Zechariah 11. Israel's under God's curse. When Jesus comes to this man and heals his withered hand, he is restoring Israel as a priestly nation. This is what he came to do, to restore the fallen nation, to make the nation a royal priesthood again, which was God's purpose for Israel in the beginning. And of course, that's what we are now. We are royal priests. And of course, now defects like that don't have anything to do with the priesthood, because in union with Jesus, we're all priests. We have priestly access to the heavenly sanctuary. It doesn't matter what physical defects you might have. Ultimately, God will make those things well in the resurrection. He'll completely heal us in the resurrection. But even now, we can serve God as priests. We can offer sacrifices that are acceptable to him because we're offering them through Jesus, who is the ultimate sacrifice without spot or blame, without any blemish or defect. And then one last thing that I think is going on here, one last way to understand this story. Several interesting things here relate to the Exodus story. And you might remember God told Moses he wanted Moses to go before Pharaoh, and he was to go before Pharaoh, and God gave him the power to do certain signs. And then in the context of doing those signs, Moses was to say to Pharaoh, Pharaoh, let my people go. Let set God's people free. Okay, one of those signs that Moses could perform is he would stick his hand inside his cloak, and he would bring it out, and it would be withered with leprosy. And then he could stick his hand back in and then pull it back out again, and it would be made whole again. And this was a sign of God's power. Now, when Pharaoh saw these signs, what happened? Was Pharaoh filled with compassion? Did his heart melt seeing the power of God? And did he say, okay, you can go free? Is that what happened? No, what happened? What did he do? He hardened his heart. And, well, he got his sorcerers involved. But yes, ultimately he hardens his heart. Well, listen to what verse 5 says. When he looked around at them, the Pharisees, with anger, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. The Pharisees are the religious leaders of Israel, and they have become like Pharaoh. And they have enslaved the people of Israel with all kinds of traditions and extra rules that God didn't make and that are even contrary to God's law, but that burden the people. They have enslaved the people with all kinds of extra biblical rules and regulations and customs and so forth. They're like another Pharaoh. And their hearts are hard, even when they see the signs. Pharaoh saw the signs and hardened his heart. The Pharisees are seeing the signs and they're hardening their hearts. And so they have become like Pharaoh. Jesus has come as another Moses to set God's people free. And just as Moses takes the people from slavery to Sabbath, that's really the trajectory of the book of Exodus. They move from being enslaved, building Pharaoh's house, all the burden that comes with that, to in the end, it's the book of Exodus ends with a Sabbath, with God moving into they were building Pharaoh's house, now they build God's house, God's tabernacle, and it ends with God moving into his tabernacle, and it's a kind of Sabbath enthronement for God. And the Israelites are invited to share in that Sabbath enthronement, that joy, that delight. Well, Jesus has come to be a new Moses, to bring us the fullness, the fulfillment of the Sabbath, to bring us into the glory and the joy and the freedom of knowing God. And I really think that's what this story is about. Some people will take stories like this or the one right before it at the end of Mark chapter 2, which is another Sabbath story, and get all hung up on the ethics of Sabbath keeping and whatnot. And I'm not saying the stories don't help us understand what the Lord's Day is all about. But ultimately, these stories are to show us who Jesus is and what he came to do. Jesus is our tree of life. Jesus came as the great high priest to restore the priesthood of Israel, the priesthood of the people of God. And he came as the new and greater Moses, the final Moses, to set us free, to bring us Sabbath rest. All right? And that's the finale right
yes,
there.
Wow.
I can see the fireworks in the distance. I don't know why. So, excellent.